Good evening to our audience on American Muslim 360 on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Talk Unchained. I'm your host, Marlon Aldridge, and each Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we discuss topics in politics, business, education, race relations, and much more. Today, we discuss the pros and cons of integration. Of course, we want you to join the conversation. And enjoy the conversation as well. If you have questions and comments, we will give you the opportunity to ask those questions or to make those comments. But before we do that, let's do a quick history review. We want to look at some of the civil rights gains and some of the events that happened up into the current time. 1954. You may be familiar with Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas. This was the first court case, and this U.S. Supreme Court decision ended legal racial segregation in public schools. In 1955, with Brown versus Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, II, the U.S. Supreme Court implements the anti-segregation provisions that had been mandated in Brown 1 and ordered that states comply with all deliberate speed. In 1962, we had Bailey versus Patterson. This U.S. Supreme Court decision declared that segregation in transportation facilities is unconstitutional. Then we had the Civil Rights Act of 1964, prohibits discrimination in a number of settings. Title I prohibits discrimination in voting, Title II in public accommodations, Title III in public facilities, Title IV in public education, Title VI in federally assisted programs, Title VII in employment, and the Act also established the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or the EEOC. And then the Voting Rights Act of 1965 prohibited the denial or restriction of the right to vote and forbids discriminatory voting practices nationwide. Moving forward, 1967, we had Loving versus Virginia. This U.S. Supreme Court decision declares that laws prohibiting interracial marriage are unconstitutional. And so that brings us up until today. And I'm hoping some of our elders are on the phone, because it's really going to be interesting since you have a larger lens of which to view this topic tonight. I'm really going to be interested in what you have to say in regards to this subject. The call-in number is 515-605-9891. Again, that's 515-605-9891. 9-1. Press 1 to get in the queue. And please, no speakerphones or listening to the show on another media device, as this may cause an echo or feedback in the program. What is your definition of integration? What is your definition of integration? I'm going to chime in on that part. Bear with me for just a second here. What is integration? What does that mean? To many people, integration means being able to enjoy living in the same neighborhoods, being able to share the same public facilities and accommodations, being able to go to the same schools, and being able to marry, etc., whomever you like, across racial lines, religious lines, or what have you, across cultural different cultural groups. But more generally, integration of one cultural group into another means that the less dominant group accepts the beliefs, values, attitudes, myths, religions, behaviors, and practices of the more dominant group while dismissing their own. And how many of us can say that that is not true? Many of us are from the South or migrated from the South. And of course, the predominant religion there was a Protestant faith. And if we are familiar with our history, of course, we know that there were some major proponents of this idea of Protestantism. Some of its proponents were Augustine, and probably the most familiar that many of our audience are probably familiar with was that of the German theologian Martin Luther, which basically was excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church and began this movement called Protestantism. At least he was one of the founding theorists. I'm going to call him a theorist. He wasn't really involved with it, but he was one of the founding theorists, having written the 95 Theses. So, again, I am interested in what you have to say on this topic. I'm, again, looking for some of our elders to chime in, because I know that you have more to say. I'm in my 50s, so I have some things to say, but I'm sure that there are others in the audience that are older than I, and I'm going to go to the phone lines right now. Caller from 636, caller from 636, state your name if you like and where you are calling from.
Yes, Kareem Hamid, calling from St. Louis, Missouri, and what a most excellent topic.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for listening to our show, being a lawyer listener at that.
Yes, sir. I AM 360 has very valuable content, no doubt about that. The Plessy versus Ferguson, and the idea of separate but equal. Sometimes we look back and our leaders were not mature enough. I don't believe they were conscious enough nor mature enough to steer us in the right direction. You know, now, separate but equal. They put pressure on the separate side of that presentation of not being separate. There was all the effort went to the separate side. But I believe the effort should have gone to the equal funding, the equal benefits, the equal resources, instead of putting so much pressure on addressing the separate, of integrating, of sitting next to or in an educational facility with many races. Now, that's fine. If you are dealing with an adversary that believes in that, but I've lived long enough. I remember I'm going to be 70 this coming May, and I thank God for that. I have a good memory. I come with a historical perspective that separate but equal. There was such a hard push put on integrating, and they ignored equal access to the funding, equal access to excellent facilities and funding. To me the effort should have been placed on that side of that question. Because the funding of schools of African American children was very poor. The conditions was very poor. Many times the roof over the school would be leaking, and the teacher would have to have an umbrella trying to conduct the class. So instead of putting so much effort on that separate side, we should have kept our eye on the money. We should have kept our eye on the money and equal funding and equal levels of benefit. You know, if there were new books printed, then we want those new books. Many times they would print new curriculum and new books, and they would pass the old, dilapidated, torn up books into our facilities. See? And I believe that we should have put more emphasis on the material side. Equal money, equal material, equal standard of facilities, equal standards of excellent teachers. I think we made a mistake there. And has integration hurt us? To some degrees, yes. To some degrees, yes. Not in all.
Let me ask you this, Brother Kareem. I would argue that that's exactly what we wanted. We wanted to participate fully in the American society and have the rights guaranteed us under the Constitution. But here's the problem.
See, I thought our
democracy is... Let me finish this part. Let me finish this part, then I'm going to let you respond to it. We live in a democracy... But our democracy is based on majority rule. So if they outvote us, then they get to determine the powers. Okay? The Constitution provides rights to citizens and powers to those that are in authority. I'm talking about in the legislative branches and all of the public offices that exist. So if they are the majority, they not only have rights, but they have powers. So from your perspective, let's say even if we had everything that you had said, we wanted equal funding and equal benefits. We wanted to be equals, and I agree with you 100%. But how does that work given that we had been slaves? So from the very beginning, there was nothing about equality. There was no... view of equality in the mindset of our fellow citizens, the mainstream. So even if we, let's say that we had asked for everything that you have stated, what would be the likelihood of us getting those equalities, given that history?
Okay, let me answer. You say the majority rules. Well, believe it or not, I remember when the effort was made to integrate public schools. The majority rebelled against that. There were riots in Boston. I'm not talking about the South. There was huge resistance against that, integrating the public school system. And this was not by vote. This was a court ruling. This was a court ruling, not a show of hands. So the majority, just Google Boston school integration. You will see there was great pushback. The majority did not want that. The Supreme Court that enforced that. But it was enforced because of our demands for that. See? For our demands for that. But I'm saying that I'm not faulting the average citizen. I'm pointing at our leaders, the people that we entrusted to chart our course for us. They should have, and knowing the racial climate at that time, we're talking about the mid-50s and forward, the racial climate at that time. It was horrendous. So they knew the racial climate, but that idea of if I just have my child sit next to your child, if I can just get them in there, they will benefit. But have we? Have we? We're
as a matter of fact, the schools are still segregated. They're still segregated
and underfunded. They have a system set up whereby tax dollars for education comes from out of the personal property taxes for a district. So that means the affluent have huge funding. The poor have very poor funding. I would have kept my thumb on the equal funding side. That's what I would have preferred instead of the putting our children in, and it put our children in peril. They had to have armed federal troops to escort our babies, our children, into a hostile environment.
That's true.
That should never have. We should not have used our children like that. We should not have done that. You know. So I say that we should have kept our finger on the financial side, and not be so emotional, and keep our eye on the material realities. I'll stop right there.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir, Brother Kareem from St. Louis. Thank you, sir. Let's go to caller 770. Caller from 770. State your name if you like and where you calling from.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Marlon Aldridge. This is Sister Amina from Decatur, Georgia.
Wa alaikum salam, sister.
Yes, how are you?
Doing great.
I find this very, very interesting because I came of age in that era. And, you know, you asked the question about what do we think that integration helped? Was that the question?
Yes, we're discussing the pros and cons. You can speak on integration at any level that you like from any perspective. That's up to you.
Yes, sir. You know, one thing that to me, and this is just my opinion, you know, I don't speak for anyone but me. In my opinion, I think integration hurt us as a people. And the reason why I say that is that, you know, there's only a few people that benefited. You know, we had the so-called, the so-called middle class, you know, the certain people just got some benefits, but the whole of us, the masses of the people, And it's all in the data. You know, I haven't looked in a while, but you know, I know that last time I checked, and there's historians that have tracked all of this, and all, you know, the people that keep up with the data. But what we see is that all across the country, and I came of age in the north. I was up north in my childhood, in Connecticut, and I'm remembering what Brother Kareem is referring to, because it's very heavily Irish and Polish people at that time. So most of them did not want to mingle. You know, I remember still, even being up north, you know, when we went to school, this was right before, everybody started busing. We were right in the middle of that. You know, I came of age, I'm in the 60s in elementary school and about to go to high school in the 70s. So I remember well, you know, the climate. Even though we were up north, there were certain parameters. You knew certain neighborhoods you could not go in the all-white areas. Or I would hear of friends of mine or people in my neighborhood, you know, they got caught going through certain neighborhoods at night that were not African-American, you know, certain surrounding neighborhoods around us. And you know, getting beat up or getting accosted or getting attacked, you know, getting in fights. The school, I remember the school, that the elementary school that I went to, it was mostly a neighborhood school before the busing started. And I remember on my hand the few white students that went to the school. And I still remember a brother and his sister that they were the only white students in my school by the time I got to eighth grade. And you know, there was always this, what's the word? It's like this atmosphere in the air of, you know, you feel tense back then because everybody was talking about, okay, now we'll be able to go to school, get bussed all over, you know, but it's like we lost a lot of our culture, you know, wanting to mix with other people. Because we still don't have the funding, we still don't have our schools still got the lowest funding. You know, things are not better. Test scores weren't better. You know, everything went to, you know, going to school with white children, but the quality of the education still wasn't there because a lot of the people needed what we got from our teachers. We had the teachers were more, they were like part of our family. You know, it wasn't, and we had a few Caucasian teachers in my elementary school. And I know of others where, you know, the schools changing didn't necessarily help the people on the ground. They may have helped, you know, you got a few politicians and a few, you know, leaders that you know, they got a little crumbs, but the majority of the people didn't benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, the majority of us didn't. The things seemed on the surface, it seemed better, but then when you look at how there were so many dropout rates of people that I went to school with in elementary school, by the time high school was finished, you know, a lot of those people I didn't see anymore. They dropped out. They ended up, you know, and I came from a very close-knit neighborhood, you know, but the quality of the education still didn't help. You know, we had to really, really, really buckle down. So to me, integration didn't, because look at, we're fast forwarding now where now everything is gentrified. Now everything, all these districts are being chopped up and the rich Caucasians still grab all of the resources in their schools and in their district. And then you had the what do you call the people, the homosexuals and the women's rights movement, they have taken over the civil rights that were sacrificed and what we fought for. You know, look at how they're trying to roll back the Voting Rights Act and all these things. Integration didn't help us. It made things worse. It made
now,
things
wait a minute.
Worse
you
for
sort
the
of, you sort of mixed two. You sort of mixed two ideas now there. I want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. You're talking about the LGBT community and women in particular. You said that they took over the civil rights movement. And then you said that they're rolling back voting rights. Are you saying that the LGBT community, the community, and women are rolling back voting
definitely.
Rights?
It's in the books now. It's on the behind the scenes. If we look in the what is that? I can't even think of the not open records, but there's evidence, you know, that they've gotten, especially with our last president. You know, no, black folk, we didn't get anything except for the few people that got, you know, they got some funding for their churches, or they got their affluent areas, you know. But
I think we're talking about two different things here. They have, for all intents and purposes, they have out-organized us. We're looking at the LGBT community and the women's movement. Now, they've out-organized us. They've become more politically active than we have. And because of that, they have gotten certain rights. I don't see anywhere where they have helped in any regard to take away rights from us. I'm looking at the conservatives that are doing that, it's no doubt about that. They're doing that. But I don't see the LGBT community or females, for the most part, females in particular. I'm really not sure about the LGBT community, but I know females are in league with us because there is strength in those numbers. And then on top of that, black women in particular play a leadership role in some of the women's movements that you see today. Now, I'm going to argue, I have a question that later down the line I'm going to ask. I don't want to let that out of the bag. I think that we are doing, I will give a hint, though, we are unwittingly doing things that do not benefit us. But I'm going to hold that question for later. Sister Amina, I thank you for your comments, and I thank you for being a loyal listener to the show as well. Thank you, Sister Amina from Decatur, Georgia. Yes, ma'am.
Salam.
All right, let's keep going. You guys evidently are very interested in this topic. Caller from 727. Caller from 727. State your name, if you like, and tell us where you're calling from. Caller from 727.
Yes, Martha Nyla calling from St. Petersburg, Florida, and greetings to you, Professor Marlon Aldridge.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam, and to all the listeners. And I'm going to go right to the punch bag and say, knowing how to, upon integration, I was one of the last in the school of 1970 when the schools closed and graduated in that year. But not only did that, my parents and neighbors were involved in the civil working, and then there were individuals moving into the neighborhood to do social work, to take, I guess you could say, stats on how we were living and how we were, they were evaluating how we were assembling under the pressure of not having. And at the same time, I believe that we were not ready to engage in the governing powers, and that should have been instituted, the governing powers of how to govern, as well as the dollars apportioned, you know, the apportions that they make, appropriate committees when they do certain things and they put funds. All of that was not instituted. Enough. And I'm sure because in the 1960s, 68. I was one of the students that they sent as one of the exchange students, and was sent to Nassau, to the Bahamas. And our interrelations there and coming back to the States, and then those students coming over to the United States, we still didn't have a grasp of what was happening. We were just in the process. But now that I look back, I can just truly say, you know, the integration should not have been the foremost process thinking that will make it us have assets rather than us being completely deficient and then being handed out what we needed rather than equally sitting at the table and forming a governing power that could speak on our behalf and then educate us at the same time. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Martha from Florida. Thanks a lot for your comments and for being a loyal listener to the show. Okay, you guys are geared up. I have some more questions. I want to know what has happened to the black family. Does integration in any way play into the disintegration of the black family? Let's keep it going. Caller from 347. Caller from 347. State your name if you like and where you are calling from.
Brother, assalamu alaikum. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. My name is Brother Mubashir Aftab Walter Dean Muhammad. You know, I came up in the South, and I never went to school for Caucasian or white people. From the first grade to I graduated from, I never went to school with white folks. I went the first time I went to school with white people or white folks when I joined the Job Corps. That's my first time I had white teachers. But when I was coming up, our school was all black. The teacher was black. And I remember when we used to go on what we call field trips, and they would tell us, now, don't y'all children go out there and embarrass our race now. This is what they told us, because we already have a big strike against us by our color. So when we look back into history, those first immigrants that came from the old world, it was Jews, Muslims, and all of them was mixed. So the Muslims that had the Quran, they knew that God said we were all equal. Now, look at the blacks. In the time of, say, Frederick Douglass was married to a white woman. Jack Johnson was married to a white woman. That was integration right there. A whole lot of blacks. you hear me? You hear me right? A whole lot of black men had white women, and a whole lot of black women had white men. Now, when they say we're all, the Constitution, we're all created equal, this is what has come, that's what the world has moved into now. Because when you look at most of all of those popular people in our history that influence us, the athletes, the entertainers, the preaching, a lot of them is my the white men and white women right now. So
let me ask you that, brother. Is that the ultimate hallmark of integration, interracial marriage? Is that the hallmark?
Is that
what we were striving for?
No, not at all.
Okay, let me ask you this. I have a personal question. Are you married to a white woman?
Listen, only way I'd be married to a white woman is that, but ain't no other woman on this earth for me to marry. No, I'm not married to no white woman. Listen,
okay, I just want to be sure.
I hear the unreliable Muhammad, he kept pure that in me. I was brought up, man. My mama, I was brought up, but no, when I integrated to school in Durham, North Carolina, I lived in a town called Walltown. Now, my cousin, they were selected kids to go to Durham High, Southern High. That was a white school. And those white folks called and act like they were getting ready to come over into our community. Do you know what those elders did in our community? They got their guns out and greased them and told the white men to come on. I was raised up in that environment. I played with white children when I was coming up. I ate a little white boy lived right behind, on the street behind me, his mother invited us to come in and eat with him. Now, what has happened? The Shaitan have done what he said he was going to do. He said, let us go down and confuse their senses. That's what he challenged the man. That God, when he said, when God told him, I'm going to make a man, that's when he got into the picture. And he's still working ever since. Listen, most of the civil rights movement, he now says the civil rights movement wasn't successful. It was successful because the army came in. They had to bring the army in. If they had not brought the army in, man, they would have massacred. Abraham is the one that killed blood sacrifice. I have said here, and I've looked at the, when they go back into the history, the civil rights movement had it, Bull Connor and all of them, how they beat our women and beat our children. That was wrong, man. God told us, and I was holding scripture, to fight them. You don't stand up. We don't stand up and take no abuse. If I hit you on the left side of your jaw, I'm going to turn the right side. If I steal your pants, I'm going to run you down and give you your shoe. They set us up. They set us up with the idea that for us to get the pressure of the white man cruelty to us, that we have to accept their God. And they give us their God looking like them with blonde hair and blue eyes. And they're still accepting that God now. Now, look at every time an incident happens. They were talking about Reverend Sharp and Jesse Jack. Where's they at now? But when they do come together, they come together and they say, let us join hands and let us pray. And the first thing they call on is, oh, Jesus. And who was that Jesus they called in on? The one with the blonde hair and the blue eye in the image of the white man. And the world is looking at us. In the email, I'm told, in the 1960s, that's when we lost it because we started chasing money. And that's what is wrong with us now. But we repent. It wasn't repent. God said, if there's just one of you down in Nineveh, I mean, in Sodom, if there's just one of you, Eman was that one that God seemed fit to do with him like he did with the last of the prophet, the seal of the prophet. And the Eman, when he came into office, he said, we are the body of Christ, and I'm the head. And he told us he followed Muhammad the prophet, and he's going to show us that in a big, big way. Didn't he do that? Imam said, Muhammad the prophet didn't get no real help until the army of Elijah Muhammad came on the scene. Y'all hearing this here? He said, Prophet Muhammad did not get no real help until the honorable Elijah Muhammad came on the scene. And the honorable Elijah Muhammad taught for 44 years. The Imam taught for 33. When you add 44 and 33, you get 77. We're coming into what they call the Jubilee. That's the time that the world is coming into right now where all the religions are sitting down like they did in Spain. They're sitting down at the table now. Who was more influential in doing that? It was the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Sister Clara. That's why they recognize the Imam. The Judaic Christian nation, the most powerful Christian nation on the planet, they accept the Imam and they recognize the Imam. What? The American Imam. And the other one, the scholars over there in Mecca, what they recognized him, Imam, as the one the prophet said were coming after him? The Mujahideen.
Okay, brother, what did you say you were calling from again? I didn't catch where you were calling from.
I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York, and I'm born in Durham, North Carolina.
Okay.
That's where the Black Bank is. Is that Black Bank?
Yes, sir.
It's in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, I used to walk past it all the time going down to the movie, man. It's still there.
Okay.
It's still there.
Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate you.
You remember I told you one time? They talking about intelligentsia of people. If they don't have you at the table, man, they're making a big mistake. Thank you very kindly.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. All right, we are discussing the pros and cons of integration. We're going to take a quick station break, and then we will come back and finish this conversation.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim hosted. From religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM360, where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
We are back on Talk Unchained. I'm your host, Marlon Aldridge, and we continue our discussion of the pros and cons of integration. I had posed a question: what has it done to the black family? I want to give you just a few statistics. I'm sure there are more. As early as the 1880s, three-quarters of black families were two parents. In 1925, New York City, 85% of black families were two-parent. In one study of the 19th century slave families found that in up to three-fourths of the families, all of the children had the same mother and father. In 1960, about 65% of black children under 18 were living in households with two married parents, compared to 91% of white children. And by 2012, the number had dropped to 34% compared to 70% of white children. Now, at the time of Daniel Patrick Moynihan's report, The Negro Family, The Case for National Action, one out of four black children was born to an unwed mother. And in 2005, two out of three black children were born outside of marriage. Now, concerning this, Moynihan said, there is presumably no special reason why a society in which males are dominant in family relationships is to be preferred to a matriarchal arrangement, he wrote. However, it is clearly a disadvantage for a minority group to be operating on one principle while the great majority of the population, and one with the most advantage to begin with, is operating on another. Basically, what he is saying is that whites have a patriarchal arrangement, whereas he sees the black or African Americans as having a matriarchal arrangement, and he's saying that a matriarchal arrangement cannot compete with a patriarchal arrangement. So I'm going to open up the lines for that, because I'm pretty sure the women are going to have something to say about that, and as well as the men as well. So let's go back to the lines here. Caller from 636, state your name, if you like, and where you're calling from.
Yes, Kareem Hamid, calling from St. Louis, Missouri. Yes, sir.
Okay, Brother Kareem, you're back on the line again. That's fine. What did you want to say about that?
Yes, sir. We can never negate finance, material. You know, this creation. When a people are scattered, they're scattered, and they take their resources and spend it with other people, and they're not spending their resources among themselves, they are not investing themselves, then that causes a real loss of community life. Community life is that which you have a vested interest in, and you have invested in it. And this has been social engineering. We have been skillfully manipulated into a situation of material dependency. The federal government came up with a plan that we will assist you financially, but the husband must leave the home. The husband must leave the home. He cannot live with you. And there was a decision made. Well, you have to go so I can get sustenance for our children. Now, that's a demeaning, demoralizing, masculine, emasculating situation to be in. To be in.
Yes, it is.
So the breakdown of the family, when you emasculate the male, when our neighborhoods were broken up, now at one time we had entrepreneurship among us. There was business. Our money changed hands with each other. But then here comes urban renewal, and they broke those communities up. And as a consequence, that broke the back of our entrepreneurial posture. We started shopping with everyone else. We started shopping with people that were not us, and our business life suffered. You cannot have a thriving family or a thriving business without economics, without financial stability. See? So I want to reiterate once more. They give us head fakes into issues that are not connected with material reality, with material accumulation, with wealth, with investment in ourselves and each other. They come at us from an emotional standpoint. You know what I'm saying? That everyone should love one another. Let's just hold hands and sing Kumbaya. But at the same time, our resources are being spent with everybody else but us. And we wonder why there is a breakdown in the family. We have to start looking at concrete, at what is concrete, not all spiritual, not all good feelings, not all that kumbaya good feeling. Let's hug one another. We have to start thinking about our finances, about our material reality. Then we strengthen the family. We have to do that. I'll just stop right there, my brother. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Brother Kareem from St. Louis, Missouri. We're going to continue this conversation. We are near the end. Caller from, well, it looks like one caller dropped off here. Caller from 636. Or excuse me, caller from 347. Caller from 347. Looked like they dropped off the line here. I have some other questions that I want to try to get answered. And are blacks moving forward? Now, this is going to be important. I have to know this one. Are blacks moving forward? Not moving at all. Are moving backwards? Caller from 347. Caller from 347. State your name if you like and where you're calling from.
Yes, sir, Brother Alden. That's a good question,
sir.
You asked. Yeah, we this. There's a group.
Well,
that
first
is
of all,
whom
am I talking to?
Brother Mubashir from Brooklyn, New York. Brother Mubashir.
Yes, sir.
Mohammed from Brooklyn. Yeah, that's a good question you put, because we this is the day of separation in unity. And God, he's going to be the one that separates. He said he will not give us our full blessing. They're messing up the line because they don't want to hear what I said. God said he will not give us our full blessing until he separates the bad from the good. This is what is going on right now. And God said he's going to be the one that separates and unites the hearts of the believers. Now, at the same time, those people that fit the description of those that Moses had stepped away from for 40 years, they lingered in the desert. Their time is up. Shaitan time. Now, those people that went with Moses, those are the people that were with Imam W.D. Muhammad. Because you have heard what Imam W.D. Muhammad has said. Look at how he went forward. And in this future, Imam going to be recognized. He was the consultant of the two presidents. He's the son of the Armalite mom. This is the future. The infinite movement going on. And a separation is taking place. Those that rejected Armalite mom, those that rejected Imam and still fighting against the movement, we done left them so far behind. Those of us that accept the leadership of Imam Muhammad, we are into the future, going forward on into the future, because God has separated those that rejected to follow Imam Wafadi Muhammad into the future. Yes, we have made a whole lot of progress. They have chosen one of our kind, two presidents, to be their consultants. Now, if that ain't progress, you tell me what it is. The Pope of Rome invited Imam twice over there. In Egypt, Mubarak, and the other one that they assassinated, they gave Imam the highest honor, the highest honor of they can give any citizen of their country, and they invited Imam to come there and speak when all the trouble was going on. So how can we say we're not? Listen, we are in the future. And God have chosen us, the people that they shut down and shut out and call monkeys and apes and three fifths of a human being. God has chosen those people to be the leader for the new world. And we're in the new world of Christianity, Judaism,
and Islam. Well, let me challenge you on that,
okay,
brother.
Let
me your name again. I'm trying to pronounce your name.
My name is Mubashir Akhtar Wafidin Muhammad.
Okay,
you got it?
Brother Mubashir. Let me challenge you on that. Muhammad, did he get paid?
I didn't hear you. Say that
again. For this consulting work that he did. Did he get paid?
Yes, Allah paid him. Listen, can't nobody give us compensation but God for our suffering?
Okay. I'm looking at black people as a whole. Are blacks moving forward?
Okay. Yes, no. Blacks, them the ones that are being left behind. Blacks?
The blacks.
Blacks?
Okay.
Yeah, that's the ones that can't come out of the darkness into the light. They so interested in their skin color being black. That time is over with, man. We are new people. It ain't about skin color. It's about the mind. It's about the spirit. It's about the morality. It's about the rationale, the psychology, and the five good common sense being used. That's what this time is, and it's built upon ethical conduct. America is the leader because it's a people.
Well, I know you
America.
Can answer this one. Now, I opened the show talking about Martin Luther, the German theologian. And I did that for a purpose. According to him, the Bible was the sole religious authority. And now here you come, a Muslim, talking about supposedly the Quran is the sole authority. So there's a disagreement right there. And maybe this ties into why you stated
that we as black
folks are moving backward. Is it because we are tied into or using the Bible as the sole authority versus the Quran? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Why? Because in the Bible, they worked on us and sensitized us to accept God, their God. And that God that is still plaguing the heart and soul of the of people that call themselves black to go to the church, They look just like the people that enslaved our mothers and fathers and persecuted them. You have to be out of your mind that you say you have a think with your good father to accept a God from the people
that oppressed your ancestors and brought them here and put them in one of the worst forms of slavery that the humanity has ever seen. It's called a peculiar institution slave. And then you turn around and go to church and your Mercedes Benz, your Rolls Royce, your Cadillac, and take grandma, granddaddy, grandchildren, and all go in there and start crying over the image of a man they ain't never seen a day in their life. And they won't give that kind of sympathy to their own kind that they are seeing in their life being persecuted. Now, we got to be crazy, and that's why the world wonder what's wrong with us. How are these people going to continue to go to church and let their reverence impose on them a God that looked just like the people that mistreated them for over 400 years? And my mama had that picture up and out, blonde head, blue eye. They call him Jesus. You know what Jesus represents? Let me say this to you. That word Jesus, J-E-S-U-S, Jesus, the Jacobite, S, satanic, U, universal scheme. That's what is ruling the world right now. That Jacobite Jew scheme is on the world. And that's why they chose Donald Trump, because Donald Trump got behind
the Jews are ruining the world.
Why are we always picking on the Jews?
I don't understand why we're always picking on the Jews. I thought the black people were the original Jews.
No, and listen, Allah says us into our holy book, Abraham was not a Jew nor a Christian. He said there was no people in the time of Abraham calling themselves Jews and Christians. God said they write with their own hand and say this is from God. Now, Abraham, we have two fathers, Adam and Abraham. And Abraham is the one that was the first scientific mind. His mind was used to search and found God. He found God. And God gave Abraham a religion that is the standard religion for all the sons of Adam and Abraham. And the Bible have lied. That's why Jesus Christ told him, I know who your father is. Now, he's talking to the Jew. He said, I know who your father is because I rejected him. He said, your father is the devil. In the beginning, he was a liar, a thief. And now, look at the ones that they chose to be the leader of this great Christian. You know what that Pope said over there? The Pope, they showed him on the news in New York, right quick. He said, the fake news is the genesis because they trying to start a new world order with Trump, and Trump represents that false Adam, corrupt Adam,
yes,
a liar,
sir.
A thief.
Yes,
and he don't mind. That's how they say they.
Brother, move on. Sir, we're near the end. I'd like to get you're on the roll now, and I don't want to stop you, but I'd like to get one more caller in before we end the show. We have a good conversation going on here.
I appreciate it. I got to tune into my show. I'm finna do a show now from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. I'm finna do that.
Yes,
my show. A message of a message.
Thank
of
you, brother. Move on.
So I'm
from Brooklyn. Thank you,
sir.
Caller from 860. State your name if you like and where you're calling from.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. This is Sister L calling from Tri-State area. How are you doing tonight?
Wa alaikum salam, sister. You said Sister L?
Sister L. I know a lot of people out there, Muslims, they going to bite me for this, but I'm going to say it.
Okay.
I'm going to say it as a sister. We are our worst enemies. I'm sorry. We are our worst enemies. We are not united like we should be. You know, back in the days, our grandparents and if you look at the history of African Americans, it would be 20 people in a house, and they may be poor, but we was holding it down together, 20. Now I got to have my own house, and I got to have my Mercedes-Benz. You got to have your own house, and you got to have your BMW. And we do not know how to work together. We don't try to put money together. Half of us don't even want to look like who we supposed to look like, okay? I'm just going to tell like it is. We got sisters with wigs on trying to look like the others. Now, you saying that these people are pressing you, but yet still you got this wig on trying to look like them. You bleaching your skin. You trying to look like them, but yet still they oppressing you. Make up your mind. And, you know, the brother had a little point about the church, you know. I understand where he's coming from with the church because going to, my family, and my uncle, if he's listening, he'd probably be mad, but my family is from that, you know, they pastors and bishops and so forth, you know, and I had to walk away because I'm looking at all this phoniness You know, I'm not saying my uncles are phony, but I'm talking about the church, okay? You so phony. You sitting here talking about these white folks holding you down, but you trying to look like them every day. You trying to have what you think they have. You think you live like the Joneses. You no, you don't, because rich people cheat. And I know that because my uncles and my aunts and them got money, and they cheat, okay? And you can look them up if you want to. Look up Clarence Lightner. My uncle, who was the first black mayor of Raleigh, North Carolina.
Don't tell all
your
folks
mayor.
Now. Don't tell on that. Still your family.
Don't put all their business out there now.
I'm
going to tell you. My people, they cheat. My folks that got money, they cheat. They is the Joneses, but they don't live like us with the Michael Kors pocketbooks. I be with sisters, and I be with my own sisters. I love them, not all my sisters, because I know there's a brother that get on the line going to say no generality. It ain't no generality, brother. I be in the mansion with my own sisters, and they sitting up here with these Michael Kors pocketbooks, you know, going against each other. Yeah, what you? I'm saying Michael Kors ain't even African American. What you doing with this man pocketbook? You know what I'm saying? I can see if you had Kyle Kanai pocketbook sitting here. You know what I'm saying? I'm just gonna keep it real. You could even have Russell Simmons baby fat pocketbook up in here, or Fat Farm or whatever that stuff is. But you sitting here in the mansion talking about this man who is a part of the, you know, the people who oppressed us, and then you don't like gay people and he gay. You know what I'm saying? You got his pocketbook wrapped around your arm, you know, and that pocketbook's pretty. I'm not going to lie. They cute. And if they on the clearance rack, I might pick up one or two of them. But to pay the full price, you got to be kidding. It's not going to happen. But, you know,
You telling on everybody
tonight.
You
telling on everybody. Then you, you know, and then you sitting up there with their shoes on, they designer this. You the one with them BMWs. You know how much a BMW costs? You could help fund one of the children at the Claire Muhammad School. You know what I'm saying? You don't need to get the BMW. Maybe you take $10,000 of that dollars and go fund one of the kids to get an education or something, or donate it to the masjid and help, you know, bring the masjid up. No. Then you ain't got no gas money to pay for it. You ain't even got no insurance money to pay for it. You don't have no money to put in the masjid, but you look good. Don't play with me. And that's the same way for the church. So we can't keep screaming
about
these people.
Okay, Sister L, we got to stop it right there. You were on the road today, and we appreciate
you. You need to have this show next week. Continue this show next week.
Thanks for calling, okay? Thanks for listening as well.
All right. All right.
All right, Sister L, telling on all of you old folks how you're raising your kids. Well, we're at the end. I want to close out here. While immigration has allowed black people and other minorities to enjoy basic human rights such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and common rights that should be available to every citizen of a sovereign country or state, the wholesale dismissal of our cultural past and the acceptance of another ethnic group's cultural heritage has had debilitating consequences on the psychology and prosperity of black people. And with our wholesale integration or assimilation of white culture, we have lost the benefits of our cultural heritage. Those benefits included cohesion and solidarity, ways of thinking and problem solving, self and group knowledge and appreciation, positive self and group identity, and beneficial attitudes and behaviors which advance each and every one of us. I prefer taking the best from all cultures if we're going to do anything, and ridding ourselves of beliefs, values, and attitudes, ways of thinking, and behaviors that unwittingly put us in a downward spiral. Certainly, we could benefit from stronger families, stronger educational and occupational values, and vigorously developing our own institutions. That's what we seek to do here on American Muslim 360, of course. Which are our protectors? Our institutions are our protectors, our vanguards. We need to rethink and re-examine everything we have been taught in order to develop a new culture which advances us individually and collectively. We have a lot of work to do, of course, and you guys were on it. I had anticipated this. I'd like to thank you to our audience for all your thoughtful questions and comments. If you'd like to listen to past episodes of Talk Unchained, visit blogtalkradio.com/AmericanMuslim360 and search for Talk Unchained or Marlon Aldridge among the on-demand episodes or in the search box near the top of the webpage. Tune in to more informative, thought-provoking broadcasts on AM360 tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for critical issues with solutions, money sense, and a new day for El Islam. This is Marlon Aldridge. I welcome you back next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for HBCUs and their importance in the civil rights movement. Spread the word about the show and follow me on Facebook. Until next time, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum.